The British Broadcasting Corporation presents London Forum, the weekly program in which we bring prominent personalities to the microphone to discuss important topics of the day. Here is Sir George Schuster of the British Institute of Management, who has been concerned for many years with the problem of human relations in industry, to open the discussion.
This is Sir George Schuster introducing this week's London Forum. We're going to discuss the question of workers' participation in management. And here in the studio are Christopher Hollis, Conservative Member of Parliament for Devizes, Austin Elbew, Labour Member of Parliament for Edmonton, and George Woodcock, Assistant General Secretary of the Trades Union Congress. I've been asking myself, before we start this discussion, on which of the words is the main emphasis? Is it on participation or on management? What I mean by this is, I suppose we would all recognize, in the matter of participation, that one of the greatest needs today is to get a sense of common purpose among all ranks in British industry. If it's a question of management, then that takes us on to the actual processes of management. And I think there we have to ask ourselves a rather technical question. How far can the rank and file, the workers, share in actual management? Management, as I see it, has responsibilities for taking decisions, for maintaining discipline, exercising authority, responsibilities which cannot be offloaded onto the rank and file. Now, I'd like to know how all of you who are here tonight think about those two questions. Are we agreed on the first point, that really one of our great needs today is a greater sense of common purpose in industry? Hollis.
Well, I don't think there can be any dispute about that, and I think the particular subject that we have to discuss is the most important because it is the most difficult. Everyone would agree that they should participate in shares where it's very easy for them to participate. This is a difficult problem simply because there is also the necessity for discipline in management, and the question is how we can have the discipline and also have the participation.
Woodcock, what's your view?
Yes, there's undoubtedly a common acceptance these days of the view that work people should participate more than they did, say, before the war, in the management of undertakings, and there I think the emphasis is on the management rather than the participation. Of course, there's been participation in the affairs in which management are also interested for many years, questions of wages and working conditions. But I should have thought that the question that we really had to discuss was how far could work people, and of course in what way, could they participate, join with management in decisions on matters which have at one time been considered purely managerial functions of industry. And I think it's easy to understand why that point of view that there should be more has come to be commonly accepted. I think that it's the circumstance of this country, the obvious outstanding need for greater production, leads people to think that there would be greater productivity if there were more cooperation. That is, if the two sides were joined together.
Well, Woodcock, that's where we might get on to the question of what we're aiming at later on. The question I wanted to get clear about now is, what do we think we're mainly to discuss tonight? Is it a technical question of how far workers can actually participate in management? Let's get clear about that first. Mm-hmm. Would you agree that there still remain responsibilities for management for taking, at any rate, ultimate decisions on a great number of important points, and those responsibilities must not be blurred?
Oh, I think on managerial aspects, the last word rests with management. That's not to say, of course, that they have that the word is not surrounded by obligations. You see, yes. They have obligations to do certain things. What they are, of course, we might discuss, but I think...
Well, we'll get on to that later. Yes. Let's hear what you've got to say, Elbew.
There's no doubt that the interest present in this country in this problem, and the interest, of course, which grew up very largely during the war, arose out of the necessity, especially under conditions of full employment,
to get the greatest efficiency and the greatest productivity in industry. However, I don't believe that this is really the greatest is the cause of this great need. The real need arises far more out of the necessity, especially in modern large industrial organizations, to give the ordinary men and women who are working in industry a feeling that they really belong, the feeling of the satisfaction of working in a community with, as you yourself said, with a common purpose. I don't believe myself that the common purpose can be achieved only by participation on the part of the workers in management. I believe that the common purpose is a much larger subject, a social and political subject. And it's very largely, to some extent, at any rate, very largely, the very problems which are the political problems of discussion in the modern democratic world today. Nevertheless, for the purposes that I've described, the purposes of giving satisfaction on the job, I believe that a greater participation by the workers in the decisions taken by management is necessary.
Well, then, if that's the case, Albu, let me pick you up on that. Isn't our problem really one of considering how we can create this opportunity of greater participation without blurring the responsibilities of management and making it impossible, really, for management to do its job as it should be done? Would the rest of you agree that that's the kind of question we ought to concentrate on?
I would certainly agree that that is the general question, and it is a question that is clearly insoluble unless there's a modicum of goodwill and desire to make it work. I think we must all agree that experiments of joint consultation are bound to end in fiasco if the people on either the one side or the other side or both sides wish them to end in fiasco. The first necessity for success is that people should wish to make the thing succeed. The first necessity is plenty of problems even then. But none of these things can work if people don't want them to work.
Well, doesn't that... I think that lets Woodcock in again, really, because I think if you're going to get people really to pull together and get into this process of genuine cooperation, you've got to satisfy them that you're aiming at something which they think worthwhile. And I stopped Woodcock before. I think he was getting on to the question what we're really aiming at when we talk about joint consultation.
Yes, I think that different people are aiming in some respects at different things. I think there is a degree of difference. I think that some people are concerned, as Albu was saying, he said, which I think is not quite correct, that joint consultation, participation arose during the war in conditions of full employment when it was desired to get the maximum output. I think it has a history long beyond that, you see, and the history is the desire of workmen, either as individual workmen or through the trade union, to be recognized in the works as something more than mere workmen, as having rights and interests which couldn't be covered by simple discussions of wages and working conditions, but they wanted to get in on the things which affected them just as much as wages affect them.
I thought I did make that point. I said that the interest arose or was stepped up during the war, but I entirely agree with you with the origin. I think that's a very important point. There's this general moral basis which should have applied, whether it did have applied or not, but this at any date. But on top of that, of course, it's most urgently necessary to find a solution now because a man isn't two beings, and for technical reasons, for no other reasons, we've given the workers education to make them highly responsible people as workers. You can't say you're educated for half your life and uneducated for the other half your life.
Well, now, Woodcock, picking you up on that, what does it point to in your mind when we come to consider how we're going to create this sense of common purpose and this process of cooperation? If what you have said is the aim, the satisfaction of the worker, that he is more than a mere unit, that is the aim, what does that point to in your mind? What lesson does it give us as to how the arrangements for joint consultation, or whatever else we like to call it, are to be worked out?
Yes, well, I think it points to a question, the question that you put, that we haven't generally solved yet. I mean by that I think that the question has been solved in principle on what I might call the higher levels, as, for example, the Trade Union Congress has solved the question being, as you put it, How far can they participate? How can you, or by what means do you encourage, permit, call it what you will, allow work people to join with management whilst reserving to management the ultimate decision, that is, reserving to management the responsibilities of getting on with the job? Obviously, you see, even when we admit the need, for whatever cause, for efficiency or for the sake of justifying the individual as being two people in one, both a workman and a human being, even when we admit that, we have still to solve these more technical questions, you see. And I should think the outstanding question was this, the one that you put. Where do we, as it were, draw the line? What is the nature of consultation? Is it to be joint agreement before anything can be done? Now, I think that that's fatal. But a lot of people in the country don't necessarily think that that's fatal. And there are critics of our present joint consultation on the grounds that it does not allow work people, through the trade unions or in whatever way, to share absolutely with management in the ultimate decision, you see. Now, we at the Trade Union Congress think that you can't come to that position, you see, that ultimately management must take the decision, but that in taking that decision, he should be aware of work people's views, not only because they're individuals, but because they have a technical knowledge which he doesn't always himself possess, you see. And therefore, until we solve that question, at least, let me put it this way, I think some of the criticism of the existing joint consultation is based upon that difference of view, you see. Not that it isn't good in itself, but some people think it ought to go further and would be better if it went further and, in effect, compel management to agree with work people before they made they took action, you see. Now, I think that would lead us too far. I think that would be too much in the way of joint consultation at the moment.
Well, that's a very interesting point of view to get from you, Woodcock. What have you got to say on that, Aldo?
I, of course, agree with Woodcock that in the present time, management must have the responsibility for taking the ultimate decisions. I think myself, however, that as joint consultation develops, this question will become of less and less importance. Mm-hmm. But you will find, in fact, that many decisions will be taken on the basis of the facts as they are discussed. And that, in fact, the influence of workers on management will grow very greatly as they participate fully and with real knowledge, and that's a qualification at the present time, I think, with real knowledge of the technical aspects of management, accountancy, production methods, and so on. But I think, In the meantime, I don't think it's quite good enough just to say that management alone must have all the decisions. I believe the important thing to encourage this joint consultative machinery is to give the joint consultative committees some final executive responsibility in narrow fields. Certainly it's quite easy to do so in such fields as canteens and welfare and so on. I'm not at all sure that one couldn't give them a certain responsibility in promotional fields. Selection of people for promotion, assistance in selection boards for promotion and so on. It's a highly technical subject, but there are ways, modern ways, of selection for promotion in which I believe workers' representatives could participate with what I would believe a much better selection of those who are going to lead them in the various supervisory positions in industry in the future.
Well, I think that's a controversial proposal. What do you say about that, Hollis?
Well, of course, it's awfully difficult to discuss these matters in this generalizations as we must, because industry varies so very much from industry, and we haven't time, perhaps some knowledge in my case, to go into particular industries. It seems to me that there are some industries where the product is a fairly easily intelligible thing, and anyone can understand what it's all about. And other industries, of course, where any extreme specialist can understand what it is that you are making in any real detail. Also, of course, the problems of marketing, again, vary very much in their difficulties, and where, on the whole, workers, probably in most cases, have a very great deal to learn, even if they're very skilled workers, about marketing and the demands of the market. So what a future may bring, I don't want to argue about these things. I think I very much agree with Elbow that it's probably the best plan for the moment to concentrate on concrete, even if they're rather small things given to do. For instance, the other day I had the privilege of sitting in at the production council of a large firm up in the north of England, which met once a month there. This time when I was there,
The previous meeting, it had been, the management had reported and had persuaded the council that it was necessary to close down a certain part of the works, which did in itself mean that 32 people would be thrown out of work. So they had appointed a subcommittee of this council to go into the case of those 32 people, and their meeting that I was at, they were able to report back that I think 26 of them were to be, could be absorbed in other parts of that firm, and six of them had been found jobs in other places in the neighbourhood and so on. So that particular problem of those 32 people being unemployed was taken care of. And that kind of concrete problem seems to be a very important kind of problem to throw at these bodies.
No, but that's much too small, Hollis. You see, I do disagree with you when you say that there are certain questions that are far too technical. I know these weren't your exact words. Far too technical for work people to understand. Well, I mean, I think that is the wrong approach. That's not the kind of joint consultation I want. I would say that it's the management's responsibility to be able to lay the considerations, if you like, the facts, call them what you will, that are involved technical knowledge before ordinary people, in this case work people, and expect to be able to draw from work people some assistance to come in at to a decision. You see, I don't believe that the decision should rest with them because management are more skillful, more knowledgeable, only because somebody's got to take the ultimate decision.